Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions and the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. In this episode, I interview Shahed Kader. Shahed is the founder of Kader Law, where he uses the subscription model to represent technology and software companies. Shahed also likes teaching other lawyers what he knows and learning from each other, which is why he started the Indie GC Community, which is short for Independent General Counsel, for fractional outside counsel attorneys like us to share and learn from each other. His approach to working as an indie GC includes immersing himself in that client's technology stack, and his approach to it is my favorite part of this episode. Thank you to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, links to both in the show notes, more on them later, and remember to use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. It lets them know that you found out about them from the podcast, it gives you a 10% discount, and it really supports the show. Over at subscriptionseminar.com, I'm taking firms off the waitlist one at a time in the order that they signed up, so sign up now to get your spot in line. I'm an active participant in that process, helping you use the subscription model for your law firm, so I could only work with so many at a time. Thank you for your patience. The podcast is finally getting more traction, so please rate and review it if you haven't already to help others discover the show. And as always, please share it with somebody you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. Shahed Kader, welcome to Law Subscribed. So happy to have you. I was introduced to you by one of my past guests, Lyndon Renwick, and I'm so glad that you're here. Please, we've had the pleasure of having a pre-show chat, but introduce yourself to my listeners.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here. Really enjoy your model and everything that you're doing. So happy to get involved here. Hi, everybody. My name is Shahed Kader. I am an attorney based in the Washington, D.C. area, based in D.C. itself. My practice very specifically focuses on helping technology and software companies with commercial transactions, product counsel work, and data privacy law. A little background about myself, my journey is a little bit different. I actually spent 10 years selling software and technology, and I went to law school at night, and I launched this law practice based on that experience, growing software companies from a sales and business development standpoint, and realized there was kind of a gap between the legal services and who's providing the legal services for these companies and the knowledge therein. So I came in to fill that gap, and you know, my clients range from early stage startups all the way up to publicly traded companies that use me for very specific things. And yeah, and I also have another business, a community that I'm building called IndieGC, which is meant to be a community for outside counsel that assists specifically technology and emerging companies. And we can talk more about it as necessary.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah, I know. I love it, seeing that non-traditional background to becoming a practicing attorney. So it's no wonder that you're bucking the status quo in a number of ways, especially that sales background, because that's one of the things we've had Steve Fretzen on the show, where they don't teach you, how to sell yourself and get clients. So like just having that background alone must be useful, you know, having your own practice.
Yeah, I mean, I say it all the time. It's the major catalyst to my business. It's been a huge advantage to have that sales background and understand how sales works, how pitching works, how business development works. And really, it's a personality thing, right? You need to be comfortable having discussions and having conversations with people about things that they may not necessarily be comfortable with, including things like costs and things like pricing involved and how much it's, you know, what is it going to take to get your clients to where they need to be. So it's been a huge advantage. And on top of that, you know, the specific market that I sold to in my sales career luckily lines up with the specific market that I target with my law practice. So as such, it's basically marketing to the same people in a different way, obviously, to be compliant with our professional responsibility rules. You know, there's no cold calling or anything like that. But I'm marketing to the same people, and I have the ability to sit across from them and kind of talk to them about understanding where they've been and where they're trying to go, because I've been in their shoes.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I feel like since I mostly interview lawyers on this show, I'm going to have to do a future compilation episode of all the disclaimers and caveats that lawyers give.
Of course.
that we have to, you know, of course I comply with legal ethics. Like I'll just have like clips. I'll probably have an hour long episode of the 30 interviews I've done just of those. I do it myself on every time I'm interviewed on a show. So selling for software companies, you know, also, whether consciously or unconsciously, you know, exposed you to the subscription model. Because I have to imagine all of the companies that you were selling for sold subscriptions, right?
That's right. They're all software as a service subscription companies. So that's where the model came from in my mind in general. Like, you know, there's a model here that should be exploited and should be offered to these clients and customers. And honestly, you know, There was a company a few years ago. It was a Y Combinator backed company started by one of the main people of Y Combinator, Justin Kang. He started Atrium. And Atrium was that legal services provider on a subscription basis. And actually, one of my ex-employers was a client of Atrium. And that's where the idea kind of popped into my head. You know, the subscription model is definitely something that can work, but it's got to, the Atrium, obviously they shut down. It wasn't a sustainable model for them, but that's because they were trying to function as a law firm, as well as a subscription provider, as well as a service provider, as well as a piece of software all at the same time, which is, you know, just a difficult thing to do altogether. But at a certain scale, and it's not an exact equation, but that's where the idea of offering subscription services came to in the first place. I'm a little bit different in how I approach subscription. It's a threshold based, right? My early stage clients or even if they're later stage companies, if they don't need me for a specific amount of time guaranteed all the time, they're not offered subscription. It's not something that makes sense for them. It's more, you know, the model for the retainer model or the project model works better for them. But if you get to a certain point where you absolutely need me for 20, 30, 40 hours a month minimum, that way, you know, the subscription model will be introduced to them and they'll be told that this is available to you, this is how it works, and I think this might make more sense than you paying me, you know, X amount of dollars on an hourly basis and we fill the retainer every few weeks kind of thing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So it's interesting because it sounds kind of like Linden's model a little bit, yeah. Right? And so when you have them sign up for a subscription, yep. They are committing to you to 20, 30 or 40 hours a month. Is that the way that works?
Yeah, that's right. It's use it or lose it kind of model, right? You know, you have 30 hours that you can use. If you use 20 instead of 30 hours, those that extra 10 hours, like that's, unfortunately, it doesn't roll over to the next month. That'll defeat the business model in the first place. That just goes back to retainer at that point, right?
Right.
But the whole idea is, yeah, it's similar in how I believe Linden gives a discount at the more number of hours that you purchase as a subscription, the lower the cost. Same thing over here. And if you purchase 60 hours versus 30 hours, it's a different rate versus what my standard hourly rate is.
And so then there's no, it could be anything, any legal services whatsoever, whether there's just legal advice over the phone, documents, like what is included in that sure. scoped subscription?
So it's still very specific to what my practice offers. Like, remember, I'm not a general practitioner. I don't work. I don't do employment law. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to help you with your fundraising. I could as an assistant, or I can jump in and help your big law firm that's actually handling the fundraising. And so help with the due diligence or whatnot, which I've done in the past, or with their contract management, which I've done in the past. But what it includes is still specific to what my practice does, which is, once again, it's commercial transactions. I'll help you draft your contracts, close your deals, negotiate with your vendors and customers. Product counsel, which includes legal research, which includes, you know, updating terms, which includes competitor analysis as necessary, and helping you build out your products and your features accordingly. And then includes data privacy law. So you're, you know, negotiating your DPAs, talking to your engineering team about what's necessary and what's not, you know, keeping up with the ridiculous laws that are coming out every 3 weeks or so when it comes to data privacy law, things like that. So the subscription model still is very specifically based on what the practice does instead of a general counsel as a service, but that's the focus still. And usually the clients that take advantage of the subscription model for me are larger clients. They're either publicly traded or really late stage, or they're, you know, really large private companies. And they have in-house counsel, they have a general counsel in-house, they have legal teams in-house, and they just need me for very specific things. And I'm kind of that extension to that team.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Especially when they're paying you like they're paying in-house counsel, which is sure. on a, you know, consistent basis.
That's exactly right. So the only thing is, like, those hours, instead of, you know, we're small firm solos and boutiques, right? We have to spend a significant amount of time on business development, as well as, you know, actual legal work, as well as actual marketing work, and so on and so forth, right? So based on that, what that subscription does is guarantees those hours for you. No matter what, I can't come to you and say that, I'm sorry, I don't have any time. You know, you're going to get prioritized in the matter.
Right, right. And that's sort of where the, you know, no, I say this in the intro, because Shahed, you didn't hear me say it when we started our interview, but there's no ethical or legal advice given on the show. But like, that is where the legal ethics of it comes in, right? If you're paying that right. subscription, you're making sure you're available. And just because they don't use
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean that they're entitled to a refund, because that guaranteed availability is part of what the subscription entails.
That's absolutely right. That's exactly right. Now, I've heard of subscription models where, you know, there are lawyers and they have customers paying or clients of theirs paying $500 a month or whatever, and the client never uses them. It's just an as-needed basis. But that availability is the main part over here, that you want to make sure that you are available, you have time blocked off, and that's prioritized. Those clients are prioritized to get that work done when it comes. That being said, you know, being a solo, being a boutique, you're limited, right? You only have so many hours in the day, you only have so many hours in the month. So I personally, the way that my model is set up, I can't have all of my clients on subscription. It's just not physically possible. But that's why I offer a mixed bag, right? It's all dependent on your needs. You could be on subscription, but I will tell you that your model and what you need from me does not fit subscription. Or you could be on project-based, or you can be on retainer-based, which is the more traditional model.
Now, when you say project-based, is that flat fee-based?
Yeah, technically it's flat fee based on the hourly rate, right? So for example, take a project would be one of, I'll give you a couple of examples. Like I'm doing 4 trademarks for one of my clients. That's going to be a flat fee base, right? But that's going to be the research, the opinion letter, and the filing and the ongoing discussions regarding those filings. That's a flat fee based. And just recently I had a client that needed to update their terms of service, their privacy policy, their sales agreements, because they haven't been updated since 2017, which is like, okay, yeah, let's get on that. So instead of telling them, okay, this is going to take you, you know, we're going to start with a 10-hour retainer and then we'll be up as necessary, I'll tell them that approximately this will probably take about 11 hours of my time or whatever it is, right? I'm just ballparking over it. It usually takes way less than that. But that's what we're going to do, and we're going to flat fee it out to that. That way, that back and forth, there's a little bit more of a comfort level that they can have back and forth without worrying about running up their bill. Like, there's right. No need for that because we have that flat fee set.
And something that you said there, I think, is really important for some of the attorneys that are trying to shift from the mindset of billing time versus the value of the work that they provide. As you said, it's probably going to take me less time than that. So like, it is okay. Like my model is the access to justice model. You're serving institutional clients. So you don't need to take the access to justice model approach. So you could charge for more for if you would have spent more time at a flat rate. And if it takes you less time, you've now made more money.
Right. It could take that, or, you know, honestly, it's been different models with different clients. I've also offered, like, look, I'm going to take a $3,600 flat fee, right? That's what it's going to take to update all these documents. At the end of it, based on the work that I've done, it only took 8 hours. So it didn't take the entire time, you know, that you paid for. So you still have a couple of hours to play with as necessary, right? That's good business development. That's good client relationship management. That's good, you know, just understanding what your client needs and providing them with the value versus, you know, the rate as itself. Because I think that when you start nickel and diming, when you start getting to that point where it's just like, you know, charging a couple pennies for an email or something like that and count that towards the flat fee, it doesn't leave a good taste. And that might be my startup background. That might be my, you know, sales background in general. Like, there's an emphasis on making the client or customer happy and make sure that they understand that they're getting provided a service. And so that also means that even if it's a flat rate, I have done so, like, you know, based on my hourly rate, you still have a couple of hours left. So we're going to put that towards the retainer. So instead of charging that entire flat rate, there's some time remaining. Hey, let's get you on that retainer model now, and let's work on something else as necessary. Does that make sense?
I think that makes sense. Something I just want to make sure that's clear for the listeners is it's sort of implied based on what you've been saying, but are you still tracking your time even for the flat fee work that you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm tracking my time because it's good data for me, right? And as running a practice, data is everything. Running a law practice, I use Clio. I think we talked about a little bit about that in the past, but I use Clio. I track my time. I use the time tracking within Clio. I use my own timers on my phone or whatever is necessary. I think it's important to track that data to understand where my time is going and kind of review that on a quarterly basis to understand where the business is coming from. Where's the majority of my business coming from? Where's the practice going? What's the growth model over here? Where do I see the most needs? And tracking time outside of just tracking projects will give you a direct correlation between the amount of hours you have a day, how much time you're spending any specific thing, what revenue it's bringing in, what kind of customers are working at that. Entire view in terms of data in running your law practice is a very important thing to me.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I think data tracking, like it's one thing to track hours, which billable hour attorneys are already doing, but they're not looking at it as valuable data to look back on and make future predictions and analysis based on, right?
Exactly. So, and we need to do that, right? Because that's you know, we don't have the luxury of a 65 person, you know, legal operations team and 600 other attorneys and legal assistants and all that stuff And the rainmakers that are partners, we have to do all of that. So because of that, there's an increased importance of how we look at that data. And for all the listeners that are out there, you know, if you are considering going into your own practice or going into the subscription model, data is important. Figure out what you can do with that data.
Right. And you know, and I frankly take a different approach, right? I'm not tracking my time in the way that you are. But what I am doing is I'm controlling my time. And you've already mentioned it, blocking out time on your calendar, which is something you talked about with your subscription clients. So I block out time to get things done. And so even though I'm not, say, billing an hour here, an hour there, I am setting an hour here, an hour there on my calendar to do certain things like business development or working on client matters, right? So even though I'm not tracking it per se, I could go back in my calendar and I could see last month I spent this many hours doing this type of task. Yep. So it's a little bit different, but you know, it's sort of, you know, if I need to go look at that data, I could look at that data.
100%.
Yeah. So let's talk about your tech stack. Because I'm interested to know. So you've already used, you know, you started with Clio. Mm-hmm. So you said you're using Clio. What other technology are you using to deliver your law practice that you're practicing law differently with?
I think if you're running a practice like mine, it's very tech focused, it's very specific, and it's necessary to have a strong tech stack to automate as much as possible or do as much as possible, right? So, you know, I use tools like LexisNexis's Practical Guidance and Westlaw's Practical Law. Those are both excellent tools for both legal research and for document generation templates, even resources and referrals as necessary, and they have practice notes. I've used a system called Alt Legal for trademark tracking. Alt Legal is great for not the blog Alt Legal, but altlegal.com is a trademark tracking and patent tracking tool. It's basically forms and systems to track trademark applications, send it to your clients and get, you know, gather data as necessary. I don't file that many trademarks, but I do help my clients maintain their trademark portfolios as necessary. So that's a great tool. Recently, I came across Case Text CoCounsel. They just released their ChatGPT-4 based called CoCounsel, which is amazing. It's great. I started using it a couple of weeks ago, and it's just great for quick legal research. You know, if you have a quick question, you want to know what the law of the land states, you know, the court system states, the statute state, you can type that question in and it'll get you something responding within like 3 minutes. And it's, you know, it kind of blew me away. And so that's a great solution. Obviously I have my email solution. I have Clio, and you know, I individually use different tools with different clients based on their tech stack as well. So for example's sake, a couple of my clients utilize, larger clients utilize Jira for contract tracking. And that's kind of their board for tracking through the status of any contracts. So Atlassian Jira, so it's Kanban board. And so we utilize Atlassian Jira, and I utilize that internally as necessary. I've used Trello before for that Kanban board and tracking as well. And then each of my individual clients may have their own specific contract lifecycle management systems in place. So some of them have Evisort, some of them have Ironclad, some of them have, you know, the main, the Concord, the ones that are popular and that are out there. And so I'll help either introduce to my clients these solutions as necessary, Lexion too, or I'll help maintain it because they already have it in place. So that's the legal operations portion of what my practice does. So that's just some of the stuff that I've used. Obviously Zoom for my video conferencing, and there's a few other things that are for more sensitive information, for more sensitive data, but that's all there. And I think that having a good tech stack and understanding what you need in place in order to run a lean, mean machine is important. So some of my clients, actually just mentioned, some of my clients are Google based, so I have Google Drive, and some of my clients are Microsoft based, so I have, you know, SharePoint. So
right.
Yeah, the optionality needs to be there, especially when you're the type of firm that I am.
Yeah, yeah. I think that might have been so far the best tech stack rattle off that I've heard from a guest, because you're using so many different things. I'm familiar with Alt Legal, but I don't think it's been name dropped yet before. Trello certainly hasn't, but some other Kanban boards have. Yeah, that's really something. So a question I have for you also, with like how much you're really meeting your clients where they're at, is have any of them had you like come into their systems, like within Microsoft Teams or their Slack or anything like that as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah, I have clients that have me on their Slack. You know, very controlled environments. I have clients that have me on their Slack. I have clients that have created email addresses specifically for me because I need that email address in order to access their internal Jira or something like that, right? That's all there, that's all available. And I offer my clients that service in case it's necessary so that I need to be brought into their system. it's limited to an extent, right? Like I can't have access to everything because I shouldn't. I'm not on one of their machines, nor am I going to fall under one of their, you know, device management policies. So we keep it limited to one Slack channel, which is only for legal discussions. We keep it limited to one Microsoft Teams channel, which is only for legal discussions or you know, contract management. We keep it limited to one Jira board, which is specifically for contracts and whatnot. So I don't have access to, you know, their tech stack or their customer data or anything like that. Very important to keep that separated.
Interesting. So I actually have a client that's been thinking that we were trying to figure that out too. Do I need one of their internal email addresses in order to get access to certain things? So you're doing that where it's like what, like caterlaw@clientname.com? Like, is like, how are you handling that kind of a thing?
Yeah. Something along those lines, depending on the client, depending on what they're comfortable with. But, you know, we keep it very strict and specific that I only have access to certain things. You have to make sure of that kind of thing. Right. But I do not offer that to every client. That's right. Not something that will be offered to every client. Right? Remember, we keep repeating, solos, boutiques, we have to manage our time appropriately. So all that means is this is something for either subscription-based clients or high-use clients that are regularly on retainer, that use me on a regular basis, that have regular projects in place. If I hear from you once every three to six months, which I have a client that I haven't heard from in 2 years, but I still have their retainer, right? So if I hear from you once every 3 to 6 months, that's not going to be offered for you.
Right. I mean, it does make sense at that point.
Sure, right.
Yeah.
Economically.
And because we're not full-time in-house counsel.
We're
indie general counsel, right. Which brings me to indie general counsel. IndieGC, you know, what was the origin of that? Like, what is it, you know, and why, you know, what's the mission of it?
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney, or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form at scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that there needs to be a community for outside counsel. And I think there's a few fringe things out there, right? There's LinkedIn groups, you know, there's different organizations, there's bar associations, there's cultural associations, you know, there's different groups within groups for this kind of service, right? And I think that's great. I think that there needs to be kind of a tech-based specific community for attorneys that serve tech-specific clients or emerging companies' clients to share referrals, resources, news, and basically build a community together. It's still in its nascent stages. It's not, you know, we're far from a thriving kind of community, but it's getting there. You know, it's slow and steady growth. But the goal of it is to, number one, build that community so that we can kind of drive off of each other, learn from each other, refer each other clients as necessary. I think there's a Slack group too, not for ADGC, but something called Lawyer Smack, which I'm a part of, which is pretty cool too. Mm-hmm. But that community, I think, is important to have in any kind of informal state. But the second thing that IndieGC is set to offer is courses for attorneys, right? So for example, the first course is something that was launched by me. It's legal for B2B SaaS salespeople, because that's kind of me, right? Like I did B2B SaaS sales for a long time, and I understand the legal side of it. So it's just a two-hour course that's available for $50 on IndieGC's website. And people have gotten jobs using this course, which is really cool. And so the idea is, this community is there for you to share information, share referrals, share community, ask questions, share news, and also learn very specifically because you are an outside counsel that serves a very specific market. And that's kind of my whole deal, right? Like I like to serve a very specific market doing what I do. And I think that there's other people that do the same, that we should have a community for that same.
Right. And I think it's also worth defining for if there's any lawyers listening, because the lawyers who listen have all different ranging of backgrounds. Indy, short for independent, right?
Independent. That's right.
Right.
I-N-D-Y. That's right.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, because, you know, there's in the indie hacker movement, which is like solo founders. Which is like for an independent, like start, like solopreneur. There's indie game development, which instead of a AAA, like big game development, indie. So like that's like for listeners who aren't sure what indie means. Indie GC is short for independent general counsel.
That's right. And we love working for ourselves. That's going to be the motto.
Yes. Yes. Yes, I love it. So let's talk about like the since you're representing more institutional clients who are used to maybe paying the billable hour to all their legal counsel, outside counsel, you know, what has been their response to having this predictable subscription?
Yeah, I think it makes more sense for them to a certain extent, right? Plus, you know, there's a couple of different caveats here, right? I'm significantly more affordable than you know, going to a big law firm. And it's not that I compete on price or anything like that. That's just my rate. And I choose to specifically not to charge a crazy rate because I just don't need it. You know, I only have limited overhead as a solo. And so I need to be able to provide services and the best, you know, rate possible. And so it's number one, significantly more affordable than what they would get from a, you know, either hiring in-house entirely for something or outsourcing this specific need to a big law firm to negotiate their deals and whatnot, which will charge between $800 and $1,200, $1,500 an hour. That's number one. Secondly, I think the subscription model, the predictability of that subscription model makes it make more sense. And it also kind of eases through the payment process, their accounts receivable and accounts payable process. Their AP process is much more streamlined because now there's no like, you know, approval that's necessary from a specific team member per se. This has been approved for the next 6 months. This is the total amount that it's going to cost. It's predictable. It was exactly what it's going to cost. And so on the 30th of each month, you send out this check. And that's kind of it. So that's been easier for them. And number three, you know, some of my larger clients, it's their company's money and they're careful with it. They have a specific budget. It helps them budget accordingly, mm-hmm. right? And that's a major thing because when you can tell them that it's not going to be There's no variable cost over here. This is what it's going to cost over the next 6 months of your subscription. And so you can get the budget approved right now. And so you don't have to worry about it in the future. And usually when they budget for legal, there's a variability involved, right? So at least for the portion that they are engaging my firm for, there is a predictability involved instead of a variability. That being said, obviously I'm not doing litigation. That's you know, I don't think a litigation attorney can necessarily give the same kind of subscription offering if it's big litigation, if it's something that's huge, you know, if they're being sued for millions and millions of dollars. But yeah, that's kind of the thought process around this.
Yeah, I think you can with subscriptions and flat fees with a hybrid model. I think litigation, even the big super complex ones, I think there's ways to structure it with certain outcome fees. So like if we mediate, there's a fee for mediation. If we settle, there's a settlement fee, success fee. You know, if we go to trial, there's a fee regardless of the outcome because you don't want to necessarily, you know, but like for every day or week or however, you know, you're doing it for trial, there's a flat fee per day, per week, whatever it is.
So makes total sense.
Yeah. And all the while, every single month, they're paying the same amount. So I think, and that helps with underscoping issues with litigation. But yes, it's complicated, which is why I also don't do litigation on a subscription.
Yeah. Right. It can, you know, it's unpredictable. That's the thing. That's it. And so, right, and that's really hard to do.
It is. But like I said, I think there are some doing it successfully with subscriptions and flat fees combined. It's just they're pioneers and they're taking risks. And, you know, as are we, but they're taking more risks. So with the business model, not with ethics.
Yes, that's exactly right.
So you also mentioned, I heard you say, and this might be just the nature of the clients who you're representing, is they are sending you monthly checks. Are some of your clients still sending you checks every single month?
No. I'm sorry. That was just a figure of speech, right?
Okay.
You know, Clio obviously has LawPay built into it. So they'll either utilize that or we can utilize something like bill.com if that's their system. It's just dependent on what their system is. Okay. Some of them will do e-transfer. Some of them, you know, it's all dependent on what I'm flexible. Like I don't say that you need to wire me X amount of dollars immediately. Like that's not it. So it's just all based on what they can do and what the capabilities of my firm is like. I don't remember the last time I received a check. It's probably been like 2 to 3 years.
Okay, good. I just wanted to make sure, because I was gonna get you on the right path if you were still receiving checks.
No.
So my follow up question to that though is, do you have it automated, or does somebody have to manually go in every month at the company and like click accept? Like, how do you have that set up?
That's automated. Yeah, and it's set up automated.
Good. Excellent. All right. So let's talk about, I mean, you've said that you've had a client who you haven't heard from in a long time, but they like the peace of mind, you know, that they have an attorney if they need one.
Right.
So for that client, and just for clients in general, what are you doing regarding incentives? If you have any, mm-hmm. I mean, maybe just, you know, being there is enough incentive, but are you thinking about incentives for having clients stay subscribed? And like, what are you doing to continue to deliver value to make sure that they stay subscribed?
So here's the thing. None of my clients that I don't hear from are on subscription. You know, the people that are on subscription very specifically need me on a regular basis, or else they don't get on subscription. That's just my model. It has to be high usage if you're even offered subscription from my firm. I don't offer it to all of my clients. But the clients that are around and that I haven't heard from in a year and a half to 2 years or whatever it is, they're on retainer, meaning they have dollar amounts in a trust account, and it's there. And if they need it, it's there for them. I'm not touching that, right? That's what I mean. But I don't have, you know, inherently, if a client is on subscription, you have to use my services. It's kind of a waste of my saving time otherwise, based on my business model, right? Mm-hmm, because my business model is just built accordingly. Am I open to offering clients on a lower rate of subscription just for in case they need a call, in case they need to get on a Slack or a Discord or whatever it is? Yes, I am. But that's not just something I have explored as of yet. And it's something that I probably would explore if I see that, you know, my specific bill of client, the type of client that I have, take a different turn as to their needs.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of specific clients and like client avatars or ideal clients, you know, how mm-hmm. is it that you are putting that together and then doing your business development, which as solos, you know, we have to do? Like what, mm-hmm. like how are you even getting clients?
Yeah, so a lot of it at this point, you know, earlier, but my firm is 5 years old almost at this point, right? So I started it in 2018, I went full-time in 2019, and now, you know, we're almost four years of full-time. In the beginning, it was very much putting out content. Like LinkedIn has been major for my firm and just establishing myself as somebody that knows what they're talking about a specific subject matter. Is a major thing that you could do either on LinkedIn or on a blog post. So I write a ton of content, I jump on webinars, and I do that. At this point, a lot of my clients are either coming from a referral, you know, they'll be introduced to me by another attorney, they'll be introduced to me by another client, they'll be introduced to me by a friend, whatever it is. Or B, still through LinkedIn, really, because I post very regularly there. And I started a newsletter there, it has 1,000 subscribers. It's pretty cool that it's even gotten to that. But it's all content that I've written on my blog in the past, and I'm just kind of repurposing it onto LinkedIn. But that has been how my clients have come to me. It's very much based on word of mouth referral and very much based on, hey, you are talking about something that I need to know more about and something that I very specifically need for my business. So let's have a conversation about whether you can help my business or not. And that's how it's been. I've also gotten very interesting. I've gotten some clients where I have been on a negotiation call on behalf of them with like the director of procurement or the general counsel for the other company. And I've gotten calls from that other company afterwards and said, hey, we need what you do for our deals. Can we get on a call and see how we can scope that out? And, you know, we discuss conflicts of interest and whatnot, if any, and then kind of jump into that kind of engagement. So I've gotten clients like that. But at this point, you know, I don't do any advertising. It's just not, it never worked for me very specifically for my ideal client profile, which is, you know, mid to late stage technology companies that need very specific things. Mm-hmm. And my business is the type that the only way you're going to work with me is if you really need what I do. That's honestly, like, it's not very convincing. It's not me convincing them that they need what I do. They're at that point where it's just like, all right, you know what? I need somebody to handle my commercial transactions. I'm building a whole bunch of stuff for my business and I have no idea if it's legal. I need somebody to handle a product counsel. I'm getting all these DPAs and BAAs. I have no idea what they mean. I need somebody to help me with data privacy. So.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, it sounds like you got it figured out. Speaking of the content that you're creating though, I mean, you mentioned recycling content, which is, you know, good to do. If you have it, you got to start from scratch at some point, but like when you have evergreen content, you know, that's something that you could recycle. And you do, I see news updates too, though, because you're also staying up to date on what's happening. And I get the email alerts as well, because if you're subscribed to IndieGC, right, these are things you're going to be getting through IndieGC as well. So maybe do you want to talk a little about your content creation strategy and how that's worked for you?
Yeah, absolutely. So a lot of the content that I've created, so I have a YouTube channel that I've done webinars on. You know, it's been shared webinars. Like I hopped on with the director of information security for some major companies and talked about what's best practice for information security. I've hopped on with the litigation council, business litigation council, to talk about what's the most litigated terms. So that's on my YouTube channel. You can just search Shahid Kader. It's there. I have about 55 blog posts on my website, katerlaw.com. And all those blog posts range from, like, you know, the anatomy of an enterprise software as a service agreement, the anatomy of what a partnership agreement looks like, what is intellectual property, you know, trademarks for software companies, things like that. Very relevant terms, very relevant to any company that is in this particular market, things that they would be searching for, things that they need to be thinking about. Like, hey, I just got an enterprise software as a service agreement from this major customer. I have no idea what this says. What can I negotiate on? So I have a blog post on the most negotiated terms in enterprise software as a service agreements, right? So that's the content strategy. It's just relevant content to my ideal client profile. As far as pushing that content out, I'll usually put it on my blog and then simultaneously put it on my LinkedIn. And, like, you know, I don't really have many Twitter followers, but I have a good LinkedIn following, so I'll put it on that. And, you know, their algorithm is all over the place. You can't trust it, but at least it's there, right? But their whole newsletter system, what I've been doing is all these 55 blog posts that I've written since 2019, I've been updating them on my website, on the Kader Law website, and posting it onto the LinkedIn newsletter and linking it to the website. So that way, it's kind of multiple ways of getting to the clients or prospective clients as to, like, this is what it is. But relevance is key. Teaching is key. I take great passion in teaching people about something that they don't necessarily know about. Not that I don't believe in the term expert. I don't think anybody's an expert at anything. But if it's something that I know more about than someone else, I'll help them learn. And that's fine without giving them legal advice. So that's kind of the process here. It's just teaching and relevant information.
Yeah, I think that's a really good approach. And having formerly served as the young lawyer liaison to the section of legal education, I education matters a lot. But the old director, Barry Currier, used to say that he believed all lawyers are teachers in a way.
I think so. And so I agree.
Yeah, some of us lean into it, and some of us don't. But you're leaning into it. So my last serious question for you is about the profession as a whole. So ABA data on the profession has shown now that more women are going to law school than men. There are more attorneys of color going to law school than ever before and graduating. Yet if you look at big law, it's still dominated by white men, whether it's leadership or just the makeup of their firms in general. And they have a big retention problem. So even though they might be hiring more women and attorneys of color, they're not keeping them. I think this has to do with the billable hour. And so that's one of the reasons I started this podcast. And in interviewing attorneys who are doing innovative things with alternative fee arrangements, it is dominated the other way by women and attorneys of color. And so my question for you is, you know, why do you think that is?
Let's think about it this way. You look at a big law's partner page and you'll see copy and paste, right? You know, that's no offense. That's just how the firms have built throughout the course of the last 100, 150 years of the current law firm model. I think that it has very much to do with opportunity, right? I went against the grain. Like, I never worked for a law firm before I launched my law practice, completely against the grain. My career was in sales before this, completely against the grain. Usually people go the other way. They go from law to sales. And I can tell you the 50 attorneys that have done that journey versus the journey that I've gone on, when they always ask me why. And I think that when you see that there is a lack of opportunity in a particular place. Like, if you go to the traditional, you know, partner track model, if you think, even if it's not true, right? I think diversity and inclusion is a very big thing right now. And I think a lot of firms are taking it very seriously, and I commend them for that. But I think, you know, inherently, if you have it in your mind that, you know what, I'm not going to get a fair strike over here, or maybe this journey would be harder for me, let me try something different. And that's where the retention would come into play. Like, let me launch something on my own. I can probably do this myself. Let me join a boutique where I can come in as a partner or a senior associate. Let me do something from the ground up. That way you're skipping a couple of steps of, you know, doing a lower level work or climbing through the hierarchy. And then in 20 years, you become a partner. Once again, that's a great model, perfectly fine for whoever wants to do it, but it's not for everybody. But, it, you know, the question is, why do you think this is the case? Why do I think this is the case? I think that if you think that there's a lack of opportunity, you have to find another way. And this is the other way. The other way is by going off on your own and starting your own law firm, by offering alternative ways to provide legal services, by going into things like subscription models or, you know, project-based models, or joining an alternative legal services provider, something like, you know, there's a few of them out there, joining a marketplace. All those are opportunities that are there that are a little bit more flexible. So, you know, I think that's my thought process. But I will caveat that with, you know, I have never worked for a big law firm, so I don't know the culture. I have never worked for, all I know is like, I have negotiated with partners of big law firms, and I have, you know, had discussions with them. I have networked with them and so on and so forth. And that's the extent of my understanding. But, you know, I think the direction that this is going is because that's also kind of the American way, right? Like you find a way, to do it. And the way to do it is this is how it is. You go off on your own and make it happen. And that was my whole thought process too. So,
yeah. Yeah. Wow. I've yet to hear it. But like when you say like the American way, it also makes me think of like the immigrant story too.
Yeah, that's exactly right. My parents were entrepreneurs. My brother's an entrepreneur. It's in my blood to be an entrepreneur. So this was going to happen regardless. It's just a matter of what I did to do it. I started a law firm. And that's kind of ingrained in us. We have to do more. We have to do as much as we possibly can. And if the traditional way is not the way that you want to go, to find another way. And that's the way that I've gone. So. Mm-hmm.
Love it. Oh, my last question for you is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Yes, it is a sandwich. It is a meat between either a single piece of bread or two pieces of bread, depending on how the bun is cut, with toppings. And I consider that a sandwich.
All right. Very definitively said, I must say.
Yeah, I've thought about this.
So if any of my listeners want to follow up with you, or if they're in the space where it makes sense for them to join NDGC, how do they do that?
So the NDGC website is indygc.co. So indygc.co. And you can join. It's free. You know, it's a free membership. You can jump on in. That's how you join NDGC if you'd like. If you'd like to connect with me, best way, honestly, is through LinkedIn or filling out the form on my website in case you want to work with me on something. But you can add me on LinkedIn. It's Shahed Kader, Shahed Kader. You know, I'm happy to chat there. I'm happy to, you know, send me a message and we can hop on a quick networking call. I love doing 15-minute Zooms. If you're in the DC area, I usually like, you know, grabbing lunch or coffee or something like that, meeting face-to-face. But yeah, that's the best way to get in touch with me.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much again for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm really, really looking forward to staying in touch and seeing how the podcast grows, the subscription model grows, and I appreciate you covering this very specific subject matter. I think it's very important.
Thank you. Thanks. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for sponsoring this show. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with someone you think would find a value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kurbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kurbis with Law Subscribed.